Welcome to the WrestleWolf Podcast. I'm your host, Damian Gibson. This is your home for all things professional wrestling. Coming up on the show, we'll have all the news from WWE and AEW. AEW signing a new international TV deal. Vince is getting sued by ex-workmates again. And we'll go through the best, worst, and wait-and-see moments of the AEW TV product, which is part of wrestling, which is why it's on this show. Let's get into it. It's another big week in professional wrestling. A lot of news to get through. First and foremost, I just want to give a little bit of news regarding the show itself. We'll have a Royal Rumble review that I'll be doing with an old friend of the show, David Griffiths. Used to host a different wrestling podcast, 15 Minutes of Doom, with David. I've kind of gone off into the AEW New Japan space, but he's very much stayed around and is a wealth of knowledge all things WWE, and we watched Royal Rumble together yesterday, which was kind of a last minute thing, and then deciding to do this show, which we're recording on Wednesday, was also a bit of a last minute thing as well. So I know there's a lot of people who come to the podcast because they are rusted on AEW fans. I completely understand that. We're not going to turn this episode or this weekly show into a WWE show, but if you want to hear what we thought of the Rumble, that episode will be out on Thursday. Don't worry, I've got a lot to say. There was some pretty fucking weird things happening, so I'll save that up for Wednesday when I talk to David about it. But keep an eye out if you haven't subscribed or followed the podcast, depending on what language your podcast player uses. Do that now, and you won't miss out on that episode. Also got a few things in the pipeline coming up with Sir Kayfabe, Matthew. A few sort of left-of-center ideas, not so much necessarily going through match-by-match reviews of shows, kind of more of a top 10 list, what would happen if we did this fantasy booking kind of show. So we've got those things coming up in the new year as well. Lots to look out for with WrestleWolf. So really excited about that. Let's first and foremost get into the news. Now, I mentioned at the top of the show that there is a new international TV deal happening with AEW. It's with Danzn, or D-A-Z-N, International TV Group. Wrestling Observer reported on the just after Christmas, the 26th of the 12th, issue was announced. The monetary figure was not disclosed, so I'm reading Dave Meltzer's writing here, so sometimes it could be a little difficult to understand exactly what he's being said here, because grammar's not the strongest suit. But essentially, deal was disclosed. The monetary figure was not. The key to the deal is Danzn's buying rights to the pay-per-view shows in 42 countries, which a whole bunch of countries essentially throughout Europe: Albania, Czech Republic, Denmark, Hungary, Iceland, Jersey, Lithuania, Malta, Ukraine. List goes on and on. Danzn's making a heavy play to get into the wrestling business, and also has a deal with Impact, so they're doing a similar thing for it. So essentially, Danzn will air in these countries. So Dynamite will be live every Wednesday in these 40 or so countries that Danzn will air into. Rampage will be at the same time it airs on Friday night on TNT. Battle of the Belts is at the same time on TNT. All through pay-per-view shows. Dark Elevation Monday will be on. So the Dark and Dark Elevation shows will also be on Danzn. Even though Danzn will be carrying those shows, those shows will also continue to air on YouTube as well. And even though the pay-per-views will be on Danzn, you can still buy the pay-per-views via Fight in those countries as well. So essentially, all it's really doing is bringing Dynamite and Rampage to actual TVs in Central Eastern Europe. So that's that's fantastic. A good deal for AEW to get involved in as well. I might try and follow up and see how Impact has fared with that deal and see what the what AEW can expect. Because there's a lot of movement happening with international rights for wrestling shows at the moment. We're going through that at the moment with in Australia with the WWE Network moving across to Binge. I mentioned last week that there was basically nothing on Binge. To be fair to them and WWE, there has been a lot more content put on the last week. So I'm hoping it's just a case of transporting stuff from one server to another, and that's taking a little while to get that happening, I would hope. But a lot more wrestling content on there this week than there was the week before. So that's really promising for us down here. But yeah, a lot of different stuff happening TV rights-wise, so I'll keep an eye out on that and maybe try and get a bit of information of that Impact deal as well. WrestleNomics has reported that Composite Effects LLC filed a legal complaint in December, just before Christmas, in the US District Court in Louisiana against AEW and Austin Mattelson, which is Luchasaurus, claiming that merchandise they sold, the mask, Mattelson had the rights to essentially Luchasaurus' first mask, his babyface mask. He essentially just bought off a website. And I've looked at the photos of the initial mask, and it's a mask that comes all the way down over your chest. It's got a big chest plate and stuff as well. Supposedly Luchasaurus just cut that off and kept sort of the, if you remember, that it's a like Kane's old mask essentially, but with dinosaur horns on it. Yeah, Composite Effects not happy about that. The complaint claims that Mattelson and Composite Effects worked together in December 2016 to have a modified version of their Viper silicon mask made, adding the horn. So Luchasaurus was working with them. This is what Composite Effects are claiming. They also claim that in 2019, when Mattelson signed with AEW, they tried to come to a licensing agreement with him for merchandise, the mask, to merchandise the mask, but no agreement was reached. In February 2021, Composite and AEW were in communication, according to the complaint, about a new Luchasaurus mask, and AEW purchased the rights to have that mask. But Mattelson claimed that they rarely ever used the mask, that they had the rights to. Again, I'm trying to read Dave's writing here. It's a little bit all over the place. Luchasaurus is saying that he and Tony Khan saw the new mask on his face, but they both felt the old mask was too iconic and they didn't want to change the face. So essentially the story is that there was a mask that was used a couple of times when Luchasaurus was babyface. Composite Effects are saying that essentially there was an agreement to use that mask. Luchasaurus and Tony Khan are saying, no, there wasn't. So we'll see how that plays out. Usually these things kind of get settled out of court. You know, if Luchasaurus and AEW feel strongly enough about it, they'll take it to court, but I don't see that happening. Just interesting that, like, I hadn't even thought about, like, you know, someone would have made that mask and there would have been an agreement about it. And I don't know whether something like this would happen now with AEW. I feel like they're probably a lot more savvy to, well, if we're going to get this person to make a mask for us, let's make sure we buy the rights to it so we never have this problem ever again. You can say what you like about WWE, but you don't really hear about these kind of problems. You hear about a lot of other problems, but the day-to-day business of buying rights to things and all that sort of thing, they have 100% got that down. So that's something that AEW, it sounds like AEW is learning on the job a little bit here. Fightful this week reported that Brian Cage's contract is coming up in a few weeks, which is interesting because, one, Brian Cage is one-third of the Ring of Honor Trios titles that he holds with Taya Luina and Bishop Kuan. And he's getting a push. Like, he was in essentially what was the main event on Dynamite this week. So, it could be one of those things where Brian Cage is getting a push because his contract is coming out of contract in a few weeks. I don't know, you know, Kayfabe and I have sort of spoken about this in the past, that out of the whole AEW roster, it does feel like maybe Brian Cage is a guy that WWE would definitely have their sights set on, especially considering the matches he's had back that he's had since he's sort of come back through this Ring of Honor period of his. But I just don't, he's kind of an upper mid-card player in AEW. I can't see WWE falling over themselves to get him at the moment. So I think it would more be a case of Tony and Brian Cage coming to an agreement. But who knows? I mean, Brian Cage was off TV for a long period of time. There wasn't a huge explanation as to why. So, you know, people can hold on to things like that. We're all human. So if you feel like you were underutilized by your boss for a long time, even if things are pretty good right now, those things will still come into your mind, especially if you're New Japan. We've got some news about New Japan in a sec. New Japan will be looking for wrestlers. So maybe New Japan would be into it. Maybe WWE, who knows? But we'll keep an eye on that as well. A third lawsuit was filed against WWE this week in relation to Vince's return. It was due to one of the lawsuits that McMahon repealed the clause of. He added on his return that he was a leading shareholder and had full power over the sale and ratification of a new television deal. On the 17th of January, McMahon repealed that statute and gave power back to the board of directors, but that's also because he now controls the board. So fiddling around with his company's constitution to suit himself. The two lawsuits previously filed were basically about McMahon taking power from the board, so he gave it back. So those suits, the big one being the police and fire retirement system of Detroit, is looking for a mootness fee because they forced McMahon to change the bylaws. The newest lawsuit has shareholders Carol Castle and Crystal LaBelle, represented by Christian and Doherty LLP. They're suing Vince over alleged history of paying to cover up sexual harassment accusations. So this is ongoing with WWE. And of course, as soon as Vince comes back, this kind of bad news follows. So it seems like the sale is in full swing. Though reports this week that Vince is essentially not showing up to any creative, he hasn't been to a taping yet, and is doing normal hours. He's just heading to Titan Towers 9 to 5, working on the sale. So yeah, looks like that's definitely happening, and my bet is still Saudi Arabia. Fightful also reported last week that WWE is considering bringing back the Authors of Pain and Paul Ellering as a unit. Don't know why I can't say Ellering. Which I think is good. I think that's good. I thought the Authors of Pain, especially in NXT, as with Ellering as a manager, looked fucking great. And then again, you know, I mean, it was difficult because it was around the, it was around lockdown COVID time, so things were kind of all over the place. But again, it was one of those things where, you know, some guys did some great work on NXT, and then they were brought up to the main roster. And just nothing was done with them. So I'd be, put it this way, be more interested in seeing the Authors of Pain back on WWE than Nia Jax. And I just thought I'd throw this one in here because it's fucking hilarious. WWE has dropped the name The Banger Bros, or Bang Bros, as a tag name for Sheamus and McIntyre after finding out that there's a porn company called the Bang Bros. Just two things about that. Everybody knows the Bang Bros exists. If you've ever gone onto a porn site, it's one of the first things that comes up all the time. It's like saying you didn't know, you called yourself the Coca-Cola Brothers and didn't know that Coca-Cola existed. Also, I think it's really sweet that Dave Meltzer in his notes here, all of this news is care of Wrestling Observer. WWE had dropped the name. He wrote here after finding out there's a porno company called the Bang Bros. I love that Dave Meltzer is so busy watching UFC and wrestling that he doesn't even have time to watch porn. So yeah, that's all the news that's fit to print. Let's jump in to this week's AEW TV. Okay, so let's get into the AEW storylines of the week. We'll start with the Alberto Del Rio Championship Run Heat story of the week. It's a bit of a mouthful. I said I would come up with new titles for these segments, and I'm still working on it, but I think you get the picture. This is the storyline that reminds us of Alberto Del Rio's championship run on WWE, the worst championship run of all time in any promotion. And it's the Acclaimed and Daddy Ass therapy session with the Guns. Now, anyone who has listened to this podcast or my previous podcast about wrestling knows that I'm not adverse to silliness. I'm not adverse to weird situations happening. I am definitely not adverse to storylines happening outside of the ring. I'm not Brian Alvarez. But this story, what happened here was really strange. And I love the Acclaimed. I love the Acclaimed and Daddy Ass. It's one of the most over gimmicks in the world. I just gave the Guns my most improved award for 2022. So everybody involved in this story, I have no problems with. I walked away from this particular segment, this particular chapter of this story, thinking, who am I meant to like here? Is this a heel turn? Is this the beginnings of a heel turn for the Acclaimed? If so, it might be the dumbest booking decision Tony has ever made. And if it's because FTR are going to be coming back soon, or the Young Bucks want another title run, that's me just making it up. So maybe it's just to get Daddy Ass out of that team and putting him back with his sons. If that's the case, then I'm not 100% against it. But I just don't understand why you wouldn't. Why you wouldn't let this team continue to flourish for at least another 3 to 6 months, at least. I mean, they are so over. They are Attitude Era over. And I don't just say that because Billy Gunn is involved. I mean, you've just got to watch the reactions to when they come out. And it doesn't matter where they are. It could be San Francisco, could be Texas, could be Boston, could be Canada. It doesn't matter. When they hit the ramp, people lose their fucking mind. And I don't know, outside of MJF and Bryan Danielson right now, if there's anybody else in the company, maybe Jamie Hayter. There's not too many other people in the company who are eliciting that kind of reaction. So to fuck around with the chemistry there, even just in a slight way with this segment, I immediately don't like. And then the story that was told in the segment is that they've got a therapist there who doesn't do anything at all. So that in itself is dumb. I realize she's there kind of just to facilitate the idea of the segment, but it's poor. You've got a character there. She's not saying anything. So she's superfluous. Get rid of her. And then Daddy Ass kind of runs the counseling session. And the other thing as well is that there was this whole tone still of like, therapy's a bit fucking dumb, isn't it? Like, that was the tone that I got from this whole thing. And essentially, Daddy Ass goes to town on both teams because they've both got complaints about each other. The Acclaimed say that the Ass Boys are entitled. Well, actually, Daddy Ass says, why are you guys such entitled assholes? And then the Gun Club, the Ass Boys, his two sons, say, you know, if there's anything wrong with us, it's your fault. Because you were never there when we were kids. If there's a problem with you, like if you have a problem with us and anything to do with us, you're on the road 320 days of the year. So you can't complain about what we ended up being like because you didn't take up your responsibilities as a father, which immediately, for me, puts the Guns as the face in this scenario. It definitely makes Daddy Ass a heel. And then the Acclaimed are like, suck it up. And so they feel like assholes now as well. And this was kind of the tone throughout the whole. So the segment only went maybe 5 minutes. But I walked away from this segment genuinely feeling like, at best, that the Guns were the faces in this storyline. But also that, like, everybody's a bit of an arsehole in this story, and I don't really like anybody after this conversation. I'm hoping that this is maybe just planting the seed for what will happen eventually. Maybe at Revolution, maybe Daddy Ass ends up helping the Guns win their first tag championship, and it was planned all along, and this is just part of the breadcrumb trail that's being left to be able to tell that story afterwards. If that's the case, great. I think that's probably what's happening, but if that's not what the plan is, then we need to end this immediately. I'm actually just making a scissor action with my fingers and didn't realize I was doing that. but this story needs to, because AEW are on, on the upswing again. Ratings are up, crowds are up a little bit, but there are crowd numbers in the next 2 to 3 weeks that aren't great, especially across the flyover states, Texas in particular, not doing huge numbers there. So if you've got anything that can get asses in seats, don't fuck with it. just don't fuck with it. And this genuinely, if this is it feels like a fork in the road moment for this story. And if they decide to go down, if they continue to go down this path of like Daddy Ass thinks that both teams are shit and they need, like, you know, to put it bluntly, it felt like Daddy Ass buried both tag teams in a segment and then we moved on. It was like, but I really like both teams. I'm meant to not like them. It felt like the show was telling me don't like the Acclaimed because they're assholes, and that's bad storytelling. Let's move on to the There's Something Happening Here segment. I told you I'm naming them all. I'm going to change the names every week. But essentially, it's the storyline where something's bubbling. It's not 100% great. It's not there yet, but something's happening and I'm interested in what's happening. This is the same storyline 2 weeks in a row, and it's the women's feud, the locker room, the AEW women's locker room being divided in two, essentially the originals versus the outsiders. We had a match between Toni Storm and Ruby Soho, which was a really good match. Both these girls are really good workers, and it showed. Really enjoyed the match. Britt Baker comes out towards the end of the match. Toni had almost got the pin a couple of times. Britt Baker's music hits. Toni gets distracted. Ruby gets the win. Well, I mean, she, you know, super kicks Toni because of the distraction and essentially gets the win because of it. And then Britt confronts Ruby on Rampage, essentially saying, pick a side. I know you're from WWE. But you've been here for a while and it feels like you're on our side, but are you? And I like this, I think that's kind of what we were trying to do in the segment I was talking about in the Del Rio segment of the week, where we're trying to will he, won't he, whose side is Daddy Ass on? But no one wants Daddy Ass on any side other than the Acclaimed right now. I'm with Ruby Soho and this storyline. I'm kind of interested to see which way she goes. And we're doing a good job of turning Britt into a face. I'm not as annoyed to see her at the moment, which makes me kind of feel a bit dumb because obviously the heel work that she was doing was working. But as I've said before, it did very much feel like Miz heat or go away heat rather than proper heat. But who knows? Maybe I'm wrong. But yeah, I like that Britt is getting this this baby face rub, and I think this storyline really is picking up groundswell for what I think will be the inevitable debut of Mercedes Money after she does her New Japan work. I can't believe that Mercedes has signed to New Japan Strong. There's just no way. So I think Mercedes comes in. I think she probably comes in as a heel and works with Saraya and with Toni Storm and maybe Ruby Soho, and they form a heel faction for Britt Baker and Jamie Hayter to go up against. So I think that's perfect. You know, maybe that's not what's going to happen. The only other thing I can think of is that maybe this is the storyline to sort of find who is the number one woman in the place. Maybe maybe Saraya ends up being the monster heel in the division, and Saraya can come in and knock her off. Don't know. I like this storyline much better. I think heel Mercedes working with the WWE girls is fun, you know. A lot of fantasy booking to the storyline, but who cares? Like, you know, Tony Khan is at his best when he essentially does do fantasy booking for real because he can afford to. That's what we love about him. So, yeah, it's on the boil and I'm really into it. And what I do like about it is that it allows you to use a lot of different girls without forcing all of them on camera at the same time. So I'm really liking that. Feels like there's more time for the girl. Everything about it is good. So just watching it. It's on the boil at the moment. Looking forward to seeing where it goes next. And the over story of the week, keep it nice and simple for the most important segment of the week. It's the most over story on AEW Wrestling. It's Bryan Danielson versus MJF. Bryan had his fourth match. MJF likes to set a gauntlet of matches for whenever people are coming after him. Brian Cage was the fourth one. And these guys had a great match. It was a great big man, little man match. Bryan Danielson makes everybody look fantastic. The story in this match is that Bryan was going after Brian Cage, pronouns pal, was going after Danielson's shoulder, which was what MJF the week before had given him a huge amount of money to do, and if he did it properly, he would get the other half of the money, essentially. Bryan Danielson ended up getting the win because, of course, he has to. This is all leading towards Revolution, the 60-minute Iron Man match at Revolution. But what I did like is that after Bryan Danielson got the win, Brian Cage continued to beat him down because there was money on the line. He's a mercenary, and he was there to kill Bryan Danielson for money. And then MJF came out because he's a micromanager and couldn't just let Brian Cage do it on his own. And then this led to Takeshita coming out and getting the save for Bryan Danielson. So MJF and Brian Cage run off. Takeshita saves the day. I really like all of this because it continues all the stories, all the plates that were thrown up into the air last week are kept spinning by this part of the story this week, and I like that. I like that AEW does that. And then, you know, Takeshita will have a match with Brian Cage now, so that's spun out of that story, and it's allowed for the two promos that happen in the second half of the show to happen, which I just thought were brilliant. I think Bryan Danielson is doing really, really good face work here. He is the underdog babyface. Everything is against him. MJF is using every single tool at his disposal to beat Danielson down. And outside of kayfabe, anyone watching AEW knows that the likelihood of Danielson beating MJF is slim. You know, that Danielson is the kind of guy who will put MJF over as long as the storyline is good enough, and the storyline is good enough. So I think all of that is rolling into Danielson being a genuine babyface face again, and that's what he's best at. But the promo he does here, Renee comes in, Danielson's in the doctor's surgery, he's got a big ice pack on his shoulder, and Renee Paquette comes in and asks Danielson, you know, what the prognosis is. And it's kind of funny because they jump immediately to, will you ever wrestle again? And there's this, you know, it's such carny storytelling because they're really playing on your emotions of like, well, Bryan Danielson had to retire once before and you all loved him. So let's just squeeze that a little bit, you know. And essentially the doctor shrugs his shoulders, says, I'm not sure. I'm not sure whether he'll be able to wrestle again. They definitely won't be able to wrestle in the next little bit. And then Brian gets really angry. He says, you're not going to tell me when I can wrestle, how I can wrestle. No one's ever going to tell me when and how I can wrestle again. I really like that because, once again, it's utilizing things that have happened in the past to blend reality into kayfabe, and that's when the best stories happen. And essentially, he looks down the barrel of the camera and he says, no one's going to tell me when and how I can wrestle. I'll be at Dynamite next week to take on whoever MJF you've got for me next week, and then I'm going to see you at Revolution, and I'm going to show the world how big a fraud you are. I don't even think you're scared anymore. I think you're just a fraud. Stuff like that, which is great. And then, you know, a couple of segments later, we cut to MJF, and he's locked himself in a broom closet, and he apologizes for the lighting in the broom closet. But he says, hey, it's not the first time a Jew's had to hide from a blue-eyed boy in a cupboard, huh? And that's the first line of the promo. And essentially, what I love as well, outside of the normal stuff that he does with Danielson and the sort of last two-thirds of the promo, he also puts Takeshita over. So he says, Takeshita, yeah, I know how to say your name. I know who you are. I know what you've done. Like, he is so good at that. I know a lot of people, if you're a wrestler, you're listening to this, you're like, well, that's just 101. I don't know why you get so, you know, horny for that. But it doesn't happen that often. It happens a lot less than it should. Where heels will do the typical thing, or what the technique should be is, I know that you're a really good wrestler, but da 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 da, because you're putting it in the person's mind, you're putting it in the viewer's mind. I know you've won this championship, and I know you've beaten these people, and I know these people love you, but I'm gonna end you. That's the heel. That's how a heel should cut a promo. MJF does it every single time, and he does it really well. Does it so seamlessly, you don't even really notice he's doing it until you do what I do and actually write down what these people say and dissect it. But he does it with Takeshita. So before he even gets to Danielson, he puts Takeshita over. Takeshita's not even really in the feud, but he's also just putting, you know, he's the new Chris Jericho. He's just putting people over for fun. And, you know, it makes me, you know, in kayfabe, I hate MJF, but in real life, I love him. I love what he's doing here. He's putting people over. He's building the roster. You know, he is the man in AEW right now, and it's great to watch. So he says, yeah, Takeshita, I know who you are, buddy. I know how to say your name. You get involved in my stuff again, I'll fucking end you, which is great. And then he says, and Danielson, man, I got something for you next week. Timothy Thatcher. Good luck with that. And then that's basically it. If those who don't know, Timothy Thatcher is currently wrestling for Pro Wrestling Noah. He is a British strong style expert, and what that means is he's a grappler, but will legitimately try and put your shoulder out of his socket. He was on NXT for towards the end of the Triple H era. Triple H was a big fan of his. And he's a ring technician. He's a fantastic wrestler. I to be honest, when he was on NXT, I might have talked some smack about him, only because he was part of the Black Shorts, Black Boots brigade of Hunter's people. That I found Hunter's NXT towards the end there very bland. We didn't have too many characters in there, so I was getting a little bit bored of that. Timothy Thatcher was a part of that. But anyway, Timothy Thatcher, Bryan Danielson having a match. This continues on Bryan Danielson's traveling roadshow of dream matches that he wants to have. And if you don't know who Timothy Thatcher is, and I know this is a big complaint with AEW a lot of the time, especially in these kind of gauntlet series that happen, especially when you know Bryan Danielson and you don't know who these other people are. Trust me, Timothy Thatcher versus Bryan Danielson will be a fantastic match. Do not worry if you don't know who Timothy Thatcher is. I really liked it that they showed who he was this time, and it was sort of Tony Khan answering that internet criticism a little bit of like, okay, I know you're all going to say I don't know who this is, so here he is. Even though he was on WWE TV for 2 years, let's just remind you who he is. But don't even worry about it too much, because this will be one of those matches that it will enhance your love of wrestling. It really will. It'll make you believe. So yeah, once again, we're at a loggerheads. MJF feels like he's got control of the situation, right? It feels like he knows exactly what Bryan Danielson's going to do. He knows that he's one step ahead right now. Or that's how he feels. That's how he's portraying himself. Although, you know, his scenery, like where he is, betrays that because he has locked himself in a cupboard. And so, you know, what he's saying is one reality, but what he's doing is the actual reality, that Bryan Danielson is storming around backstage looking for MJF, and he's locked himself in a cupboard because he is actually scared of Bryan Danielson. Everything that Bryan Danielson is saying about MJF is correct. And those little bits and pieces, that attention to detail in the storytelling in AEW is what makes it must-watch TV every week if you're a wrestling fan. All right, well, look, this was a lot of fun for me, guys. I don't know about you. Next week we'll have the same segment. We'll have news and we'll go through the best and worst of AEW storytelling. Maybe try and throw in some New Japan and Impact as well. I know I said that last week, but just didn't have time. This week, watching too much WWE. Keep an eye out for that WWE episode. That'll be out on Thursday. If you could rate and review the show, follow us on social media. I'll put the social handles in the show notes, so be sure to check those out as well. And until next week, my friends, enjoy your wrestling. Thank you.